This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Stocks had another good week with the major indexes hitting new record highs. Investors are responding to positive comments coming from the Fed on rate cuts, which could be coming as soon as this summer. The Fed is confident that they brought inflation under control. However, there are now signs that could be changing as we're starting to see a breakout in commodities from oil, copper, agriculture to gold and silver. On top of that, Congress just passed a $1.2 trillion new spending package that could inflate the economy with massive new spending programs as the deficits in government debt accelerating, adding $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. There's also widening disparities between the labor report and the household survey, which shows the economy is actually shedding jobs instead of adding them. The same applies in the oil market, with the widest spread between OPEC and the IEA on oil demand. The IEA expects lower demand this year, but they've been consistently wrong over the last decade. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplavin. Welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. Coming up, John Kozar from Asbury Research joins me. John sees commodity markets heating up with signs of divergence in technology. He's still bullish on the market, and he favors energy, industrials, technology, and healthcare. Following John, Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vaults joins me for an extended discussion on what is driving the gold market to new records, as well as silver beginning to move. Central banks are accumulating a massive positions in gold as individual investors sell their gold. Bullion banks are also unwinding their gold derivative positions under mandates coming from Basel III regulations. Listen and find out why Bob thinks gold is heading higher.
It is widely anticipated that the Federal Reserve will be lowering interest rates this year. As a result, if you are an investor in CDs or T-bills, your income may decrease. Don't wait until it's too late. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management now to set up an account consisting of high-quality dividend aristocrats and high-quality bonds. These investments aim to provide increasing income over time, while also taking advantage of tax-efficient strategies. Our objective is to equip you with a steadfast and predictable strategy, helping you navigate the financial markets and provide for a more secure retirement now and in the future. Reach out to us at 888-486-3939 to get started. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, the Fed met this week, giving out bullish sentiment on possible rate cuts. The markets are having a positive week, all three in positive territory. Where do we go from here? Joining us on the program is John Kozar from Asbury Research. John, let's go right from the top. You have a couple key indicators, your CPM, which is your risk on. Let's talk about that to begin with.
Sure. The CPM is a risk on and risk off model. I built the first version of this well over a decade ago. It trades on average five times a year. So there's five round turns a year, five in and outs a year. It has been risk on since November the 2nd, and the market's up 22% since then.
Now, one of the things you talk about in your recent newsletter that you're seeing some, I guess, divergences. We've got NVIDIA, Meta, heck, even Apple, and the underperformance of the QQQ. So what is that telling you?
What I'm seeing broadly in that space is, I see it in the sector rotation. We have a model called the SEAF models. S-E-A-F is an acronym for sector ETF asset flows. And what we've been seeing since the second week of January is that the rotation has been exceptionally frenetic, where the money doesn't stay in one place very long. So it will go into XLK, technology spider. It'll stay there for 2 or 3 weeks. And then on the first sign that there may be a reversal or things are starting to turn, everyone out of the pool, and then you'll see quick money that goes into stuff like healthcare or utilities. And then as soon as tech reengages, right, everybody drops those like a hot rock and they're right back into technology again. So we've been seeing this. It looks like managers are not quite sure in terms of sector rotation of where to be. They're being really careful, and it doesn't take very long for them to drop tech, quickly move into something defensive, and then, you know, you see more money coming to the queues, right? The AUM in the queue starts getting bigger, more money going back in there generally, and then it's, you see the sector rotation start to turn back towards the faster horses again, the consumer discretionaries or the, you know, communication services, or of course technology. So that's kind of the atypical behavior that I've seen in terms of sector rotation so far this quarter.
Have you seen this kind of rapid rotation before? As you just mentioned, you know, I'm thinking even energy. It moved into energy, moved out of energy. Now it's back into energy. Anything like that that you can recall in recent past?
The one that sticks out to me, and none of them are exactly alike, but the one that comes to mind was in 2022 during the major downtrend. You know, the market turned, saw a lot of kind of frenetic rotation in the latter part of 2021 and into 2022. And then the S&P 500, the broad indexes, started to break down the middle to latter part of January, and money went into energy at that point. And if you recall, it was an enormous first half for energy that year. Our SEEF model went in energy on January 10th. It didn't get out until June the 24th. And in that process, I think it outperformed the S&P by like 35%, because XLE was going up while SPY was going down. So like both sides of that trade, so to speak, were working. But that's the closest that I could think of where I saw this rapid rotation with no follow through until finally the market broke down. And then again, energy, if you weren't in energy in 2022, you didn't make any money.
Yeah, I'm looking at a chart of XLE. I'm looking at WTI. And then I'm also looking at copper, DBA, and gold. So you've got this strong movement in commodities. What might that imply?
I think it's an indication. I'm even seeing some firming up in the agricultural markets, like soybeans and wheat, also corn. It looks like generally you're starting to see the commodity markets start to heat up again. I'm starting to see price appreciation. Prices of goods are going up. You see it in copper. You see it in, obviously, some of the precious metals, gold, silver. So it looks to me like the market is starting to build in a expectation that prices of goods in general are going up.
That's interesting, because Powell had his meeting this week and he gave out sort of bullish sentiment that he could see possible rate cuts. If we start seeing oil go up, copper go up, ags go up, DBA go up, all these commodities, what is this going to imply for his, hey, we think that inflation is moderating?
Well, I mean, there's other parts of inflation besides just the price of goods. But from what I'm seeing here, you know, you talked about XLE. Here's the thing, and interesting, and it plays into right what we're talking about. XLE, which is the spider energy sector ETF, it's bumping up against highs around 93, 94, $93, $94. And these are highs that have held going back to June of 2022. We've tested those highs a half a dozen times. If XLE gets to the top of the range here, which it's testing right now, and it rolls back over, that's going to suggest we're still in a sideways market as far as XLE, and we could move back down to the lower boundary, which is around 80. If we break that, if we get through 95, I think we can make a quick trip to 100, and that's when you've got a serious breakout showing up in the energy space. We're not there yet, but we're knocking on the door.
Okay. I'd like to get your take on gold, which is setting new records. And despite the new records that are being set, nobody's talking about gold, and the stocks don't seem to be following as much. If you take a look at new highs, you know, most gold and precious metal stocks are still down for the year.
Yes. I can tell you from our standpoint, the reason that we have not been involved in gold up to this point is the way that I look at markets is if it's not outperforming the S&P 500, why do I want to allocate there right now? So that's been the case. Basically, since November of last year, gold has been underperforming the S&P 500. It's testing that quarterly trend of relative performance right now. If gold can continue rising from here, I'm looking at GLD right now as we speak. The old highs are right around $195 a share. We're about $200 a share now. If we can hold that 195 level as support and gold starts, GLD starts outperforming SPY on a quarterly basis, on a 63-day basis, I'm buying gold. I'm actually looking at silver miners, XLVP. I'm pulling it up now. XLVP just broke a big downtrend line that dates all the way back to January of 2021. It still isn't outperforming the S&P, right? So that's my, you know, that's the criteria for me. If I'm going to buy one of these commodity markets, I want to outperform the S&P. Otherwise, why not just stay in the S&P? So we're not quite there. So we've broken out, broke this trend line in terms of price of SLVP, which is the iShares Global Silver Miners. Once we start outperforming the S&P 500 on a quarterly basis, that's when I'm going to enter that. But that looks like a very attractive potential opportunity here in silver miners.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the various sectors in the S&P. Consumer staples have been in a rising trend. Energy now rising. You've got the financials in a rising trend. You've got industrials and materials. And of course, you still have XLK, which is still hanging in there. It'll correct a little bit, but then it goes back up again. So if you had to take new money and put it in play, where's the strong areas on your charts that look positive for you?
Sure, that's a great question. Especially in a market like this, where you know, the S&P is at all-time highs and its outperformance has been tough. There's been a lot of churn in the sector space. The places that we have our subscribers invested right now, energy for the past 2 or 3 weeks, that, again, it's a relatively new trend. But if we break that level that I mentioned in XLE, there's a lot of room for energy to do better. Home builders. We entered home builders. XHB is the ETF, X-Ray Herald Bob. We entered that idea on 2/9, Feb 9. So 6 weeks or whatever it is since then, home builders, it's up 13% and it's outperformed the S&P by 8. Those are the kind of ideas that I'm looking for where I can not only buy something that's going up when almost everything else is going up, but buying assets that are outperforming the S&P. XOP, which is part of the energy, it's a subgroup of energy. That's one that we've been long for the last 3 weeks. GSG, Gary Susan Gary, you know, the commodity index. That is one of our newer ideas in the ETF space. That looks like, again, it's very early in the idea. I think we've only had the idea on for about a week, but the risk reward from this area, I think, is exceptional. So those are a handful of ideas that we're looking at.
I want to go to another sector of the market, which is the bond market. And I want to talk about treasuries. It was amazing. At the end of the year last year, we were seeing a downtrend in the 10 and the 30 year. We got down to about 3.8. We're now about roughly 4.3. That may not sound like a much, a 0.5% increase in interest rates, but take a look at TLT. Still, you know, it's been down for what, 3-4 years now?
Yeah, I have been paying a lot more attention to, so I look at TNX, which is basically looking at the cash yield of the 10-year, 10-year treasury. And like you said, really, we've been stuck between 4.30 and 3.75 since Thanksgiving. If we break 4.30, I think we could see 4.70 very quickly. And obviously 5% was that great place to buy CDs, right? When we were at, seemingly we were at 5% for a week, and then that was it. On the downside, if we take out 374, we're looking at 320, but otherwise we're kind of stuck in that range. 6 months ago, 3 months ago, the relationship between the yield of the 10-year and the S&P 500 was very tight. The linear correlation between those two was probably 0.8 or 0.9. That correlation has drifted over really since the beginning of the year. It's no longer clear to me that one has a strong day-to-day influence on the other. So I haven't been watching the 10-year as closely as I might. And again, we're stuck in this range between 430 and 375. Until we break out of there, until there's a catalyst, that's a safe place to be, right? That's kind of, it shows you, those are the lines, 430 and 375. As long as you're inside of those lines, it's relatively there's not a lot of risk there because you know where the parameters of the these yields have been for a while. So again, above 430, probably 470, and yields need to really take out 375 before they break any kind of support. We're just stuck in a range.
John, how much of this rotation that you've been talking about reflects with portfolio managers the uncertainty that we have on the economy? Soft landing, no landing, hard landing, they're going to cut, they're not going to cut, they're going to pause. You know, it that seems to be like the market in many ways is data dependent based on what they're, you know, what the Fed says 1 month, what we're seeing on the economic numbers. We've been talking about a recession for 3 years now, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah, to me, it's hard enough to try to figure out where the trends are. So we really focus on following the money, right? You've heard me talk about the CEF model, and we're watching the money move around the 11 sector spiders. Our CPM, the correction protection model, the one that's been risk on since November 2, that's a half a dozen quantitative / technical metrics that tell you fear and greed. They tell you if there's conviction in a trend, if there's urgency to buy. What they don't tell you is why. We don't get paid anymore for the whys, right? So if we get the trend right and we make 5%, we don't get paid anymore for knowing that it was inflation or something Powell said or the upcoming election. It's, I guess what I'm getting at here is it's really difficult to say what the catalyst is. You know, turn on CNBC for 5 minutes and they'll tell you five catalysts. That's what they're supposed to do, right? You know, is tell you why something is happening, usually after it's happened. What I think is going on here is since November, the market's up 22%. So you've got managers that are trying to figure out when they need to rearrange their portfolio, because this is atypically, like I just looked at a chart that I'm going to put in one of our reports for next week, is it shows that the percentage either up or down that the S&P has gotten away from its 200-day moving average. It's something like 12 or 14% up above its 200-day moving average. So managers are looking at this and saying, this can't last forever. This is standard deviations rise, right? It's starting to get to those levels where the market reverses. So I think you're getting a lot of nervous managers trying to keep their portfolios protected against the downturn. But then on the other side, right, they protect against, like I told you earlier, they go into healthcare for 2 weeks and then something happens and NVIDIA and Meta and the usual suspects are dragging everything else up again. So they quickly have to try to get back on board. So I think the extreme strength of the market, 22% since the end of October, has gotten managers trying to make sure that they can rebalance their portfolios close enough to a potential top so they don't give a lot of whatever profits they have in, so they don't have to give that back.
So you have your protection, correction protection model. if there's anything that you're watching to tell you that this may reverse, besides that model, what would you be looking at if things could flip and go in the opposite direction?
Great question. Two things come to mind. One is the VIX, right? Nobody really talks about the VIX right now, but the VIX has basically been in a range from, we're 12 on the bottom to, let's call it 1550-ish, maybe 16, 1550 on top. If the VIX starts trading above 16 on a steady basis, and this range in the VIX, by the way, that's been in effect since Thanksgiving. So above 16 in the VIX, that's going to indicate to me that the market is afraid enough collectively to facilitate a move down. The other side of this is when the VIX has gotten down to 12, and like we're at 1282 right now, when the VIX has gotten down to 12, we've had some near-term peaks here. We had one on December 29th. I'm just looking at a chart. We had another little minor one in early February, and we've got another one now. The problem is none of these have lasted, right? You've had these little moves down, but in order for the market to be afraid enough to facilitate a sustained move down, I think the VIX has to get up to 16 or higher and stay there for a while. The second thing is I've been watching the AUM in the QQQ and the Invesco QQQ, which of course tracks the NASDAQ 100. I watch for a trend. I use I want to see what the monthly trend is, either expansion or contraction in the Qs. That's been on a trend of monthly expansion with very few 1 or 2 day deviations since November the 1st, maybe October the 31st. Once we get sustained monthly asset contraction in the Qs, that's going to be another indication to me that maybe this 4 or 5 stocks, including NVIDIA and Meta, just the space in general is starting to shed assets. I think that is necessary to have a decline that lasts more than 3 or 4 days. So those two things, asset flows in the Qs and volatility according to the VIX.
All right. Well, as we close, John, so right now you're positive on the market. At least that's what your indicators. It's a risk on. Your correction protection is telling you not to worry, at least at this point. And so given that, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work that you guys do, tell them how they could do so.
Sure. If you'd like to learn more about Asbury Research, our services, and pricing, visit AsburyResearch.com, go to the contact tab, mention Financial Sense in the little query box down at the bottom, and we will give you a 10% discount on our 3 or 12 month subscriptions through the end of the month, so through March the 31st. The other place to see more of us is to go to Asbury Research's YouTube channel and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is the home of our Follow the Money bi-weekly podcast. The next one of those will be posted this Sunday, March 24th.
All right. Well, John, as always, it's a pleasure having you on the program, and we hope to talk to you once again.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939. Or you can also visit us on our website, financialsensewealth.com. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and strategists from around the globe, go to Financial Sense and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.